pleasure to be here and have the opportunity to address you on this great journey of IT discovery into the cloud. Amazon Web Services, I think, recently celebrated its 8th birthday, which tells you the relative newness of where cloud computing is and web services exist, but yet the vast potential moving forward to how exciting the journey is going to be. AWS Public Sector is just a little over 3 years, started with Teresa Carlson and one other hire working some of the partner programs. And that's grown now into a team of over 200 and a global presence and continues its exciting journey within public sectors, healthcare, education, across the globe. And we're excited to be a part of the journey. I want to talk a little bit about the purpose of this presentation in the context of how and why users are moving to the cloud. What are the trends that we're seeing? In order to do that, as a military officer steeped in sort of the historical perspective, I've tended to find that there's a lot of correlations in history with where IT is going, particularly where you look and try to strive for the balances as you build networks and as you build vision in this constant struggle in constrained budgetary environments to seek a balance. Everything in our lives, everything in our environments performs much better when there's a path to looking at the balances and the changes and where you're consciously or unconsciously beginning to shift, either vertically in the stovepipes that we often talk about, or sometimes horizontally where we say we need to shift into this horizontal integration. I've always seen that balance not necessarily as one or the other, but more on a diagonal trajectory toward this predefined end state, whether that's your corporate vision, your agency vision, or as a startup, where you want to go. And just as the universe is expanding every single day, so too is this vast information environment. We're adding thousands of sensors every day. Visions are being recreated every 90 days and modified, so you're constantly moving or striving to move toward infinity, keeping many of the elements of that vision in balance. And when you find you're out of balance, there's indicators that begin to strive to move you along that journey to keep you focused. And you can look in history and see where we've sort of derailed, where you go back into the early Stone Ages, where hieroglyphics on walls were in caves were the early forms of records management, Dead Sea Scrolls. Art and science was so rudimentary, it was naturally in balance. It achieved what I thought, and still think, in the Renaissance period is the pinnacle of art, the artful employment of the scientific artifacts. Today we call it technology and doctrine and policy. If you go to Florence and look at the Statue of David, is it a wonder of art or an amazing feat of science, or both? The synergy was perfect. But then, as we advanced from the agricultural to the industrial ages, you began to see this shift as specialization, technology, the microchip began to emerge, science began to outpace art. And then we've continued this struggle of where we were driving along a diagonal path, but constantly being forced either vertically or horizontally, making trade-offs. And as several disruptions have occurred, we began to see the movement from the Cray computer to the desktop. And now we're beginning to see what I believe are the groundswells of another transformation in IT called cloud computing. And I think it's important because in the last 500 years, up from here back, technology shifted from east to west, Europe to the New World. That's where the hegemonic influence was. But then it shifted from west to east, where technology was being pushed globally. And that was the emergence of the US as an innovative superpower leading in scientific discovery. So strategically, it's critically important that we maintain that edge. And I'll ask a rhetorical question of, has that balance began to shift in this globalization that we're in today? We need another disruption in service, in IT, much the same way the desktop or the internet did in the 90s, for our economy, for innovation, and to continue the transfer of technology and innovation from West to the rest of the world. Transformational value of cloud. Why do I believe that it's the next disruption of IT service and delivery? It's re-leveling the playing field for innovation. As I said, go back 100, 125 years, the greatest discoveries of mankind were the individual with a great idea, a slide rule, and intellect. Whether it was Edison or Alexander Graham Bell or Benjamin Franklin with electricity, the entry wasn't huge capital expenditure. Not massive amounts of venture capital that were infusing. It was just the courage and the idea to continue to iterate and to persist. Now we're beginning to see the shift occur, again, from that time where the Cray computer brought massive amounts of computing, but it was limited to a smaller playing field of people who could afford it. And so the man or woman in their basement with an awesome idea that couldn't raise the venture capital left a great idea on the table that never saw the light of day. Cloud computing is now providing the same access to the same compute at the same cost to the individual with a great idea in his basement as it is the huge venture capitalists and corporations. And so now you're seeing Silicon Valley launching everything in the cloud. Why? Because there's no upfront capital expenditure. What does that mean? Money that could only fund 10 ideas can now fund 20 or 30 different ideas. You can fail fast and you don't have a lot of hardware and infrastructure that you have to figure out what you're going to do with. That's igniting this vast amount of innovation, whether it's in mobility, whether it's in application development, whether it's in organizational structures. So it's re-leveling that playing field now and casting a wider net for innovation potential. Disrupting current business models. You're seeing organizations, agencies beginning to recoil on high margin hardware or big licensing, complex licensing models. You're seeing a shift toward, you know, the vendor who's sitting replacing the staff officer or civilian or agency at a high price, now being told, listen, we want to eliminate the middleman. We want to figure out a different model than this classic SI structure. While they provide value, we want something different. And those that don't have clouds that are now trying to enter into this are now finding the challenge, if they don't have a cloud, where's my place in this huge environment? And I'll tell you, I think there is a great place. But as you make the pass around cloud and trying to figure how do you balance the spreadsheet to drive to revenues for a quarter, or how do I invest in the future, recognizing that I may have to take a step back in my business to go forward. So it's very disruptive to the classic model that we've seen in government. And I think it's in new and exciting ways that's adding again to this transformation. Driving new organizational constructs, whether it's a small startup, whether it's AWS. We do strategic planning every 90 days. We listen to our customers. We will deviate from our roadmap based upon a customer convincing us that there's a feature or capability that they want. And having that agility and flexibility across all organizational constructs, again, is another exciting dimension. And the commoditization of IT, I don't know when, but I will predict within government and probably to follow in other segments, there's going to be a convergence of acquisition and procurement systems to where you will see sort of the programming and the budgeting and the execution beginning to converge and pay for IT and acquire it in much the same way they pay for electricity and other utilities. It's just going to happen, don't know when. And then undergirding it all is speed, agility. And speed and agility leads to great things for small startups who can get there fast. Businesses that have to turn on a dime, without that agility and the speed to be able to do that, they're being left behind. And so cloud is enabling, because of that speed and pace of innovation, to be able to compete in a ever-changing world where innovation is just driving new complex ways of how services are provided and distributed. It all starts with, what is cloud computing? And I think if we passed around the card and asked you all, there'd be tons of different definitions of what it is. AWS tries to follow the model of the NIST definitions. Programmable infrastructure. And I'd say beware of what we call sort of the cloud washers, those that change the sign above their data center from data center or hosting platform to cloud because they feel that that's now the buzzword and the entry. Because a data center is a data center. If it doesn't have on-demand, if it isn't looking at pay-as-you-go modeling, auto-scaling, all of those things that allow that flexibility and agility, it's a hosting platform. And if you have to pay for the power, the AC, the security, the administrative support, all of that, that in many cases in government, isn't a part of your IT budget because somebody else is paying for that piece, but it's still, as taxpayers, part of the cost of managing those systems. And so I just say beware of those that are trying to enter this market, and there's plenty of room for this market, and competition breeds excellence. But it's tough to take various capabilities within an organization, services and software layers, and try to stitch them together or do it through acquisitions. Because anytime you're stitching together, there's always a seam, no matter how good that your stitch is and how tight it is. And whenever there's a seam, there's a weakness and a vulnerability that over time makes it extremely hard to scale and to continue to be inventive. We've heard this early on in the evolution. Within government, we still continue to hear this vast underground of we can't do this or cloud this, and it really isn't ready for mission applications, or on and on. And we're beginning to see a little bit of a shift now as prominent events that in the backdrop are running within the cloud or running within AWS specifically are beginning to win over naysayers as they see the value, as they see the cost, as they see the speed and the innovation. They're beginning to move and move much more rapidly. And anytime there's a cultural shift, I would say particularly within government, because our processes and our procurements are so institutionalized that beginning to think in a different dimension of a utility-based model is very challenging, and there's an evolutionary process that needs to occur. For public sector, just over the last 3+ years at AWS, we're now in 600+ government agencies and over 2,400 educational institutions. And for a 3+ year business, I think that's really exciting, particularly when we feel we're just scratching the surface. And we can't do it without a vast partner channel to bridge our services with end user customers. They are the force multipliers that really take our platform to a different level. So why are organizations adopting cloud computing and in particular AWS? By far, the first is agility. The ability to fail fast. The ability to go into a project with no capital expenditure, to be able to test, prototype, be able to move, be able to fail fast, and not have that cost gives you more swings at the plate. And with agility comes speed. And businesses, whether you're a startup, building into the cloud, and having your business born in the cloud, or whether you're an existing business looking to migrate on a trajectory of success for you, the ability to have agility and not have lock-in in either licensing models or how you deploy and back out specific services that may or may not been working is by far the biggest reason why we're seeing businesses of all sizes begin to enter this market. It's also about having access globally. If you're a global business and you're trying to reach back to an a data center or a cloud in one area or one geographic region, it has a lot of its limitations. Being able to have access to the same sets of services through a common dashboard globally, to be able to DR-coop in different regions around the world, I think, again, is another force multiplier that allows for better business agility. And we're on 5 continents. We've had 10 regions. One of them is our GovCloud, which is our ITAR compliant region. And every day we are adding capacity to these regions equivalent to when Amazon.com, the retail business, was approximately a $5.5 billion business. That amount of capacity every single day in these regions. And that scale allows us to drive and continually to innovate on behalf of our customers and drive down pricing. Every imaginable use case and every possible vertical begins to prove. We have hundreds of thousands of customers and over 190 different companies running innovative ideas and businesses in just about every imaginable vertical or segment. That's exciting when you think that we're just really getting started. Platform breadth is the second reason why we're seeing this shift and move. Platform breadth, if you're gonna scale your business, it's not just about whether you have access to a little bit of compute and a little bit of storage. If you're gonna build and you're gonna migrate complex businesses and applications, you need many services and tools that can integrate, that can help build, deploy, and manage applications and services all the way up the stack. AWS continues to iterate at a blistering pace. This is coded in our DNA, which is really one of the exciting reasons about why I joined AWS. As I said earlier, we will deviate from our roadmap to meet a customer idea or a feature that's going to help drive much more broader access for cloud customers. The fourth is cost savings and flexibility. Again, we talked about no upfront capital expenditure. Having pricing models that are very flexible and scalable. Being able to do spot instances at night and bid or during the day when those are available gives another dimension of how your business functions and how to customize and tailor how AWS services works. And so again, it ties back to that flexibility, the cost, continually innovating, driving down. We've had more than 40 plus price reductions. We have a tool called Trusted Advisor that you can launch that will monitor your workload and tell you whether you're running too many instances and how much you can save. It'll monitor your security environment. And there are not many companies that will proactively give you a tool that will help reduce your cost and our revenue or company's revenue. But Trusted Advisor does. And it's, again, a different dimension of how to think about cloud and a different business model. And security, our number one priority by far. And having that massive scale allows us to be able to invest in security. And there's nothing diametrically different or opposed to security in the cloud as there is in security on-prem. And it's a challenge that we've had to make over time. But as we begin, particularly within federal government, to achieve FedRAMP and authority operates from DISA and many of the other compliances that go into traditional on-prem, we're beginning to win over the skeptics that default to, I can't move to the cloud because of security. And then as you begin to walk them through and have third-party assessors that are doing the assessments on our platform begin to tell them how much security is better built into AWS than it is on-prem, you know, then they begin that journey of thinking big, starting small, and then beginning to scale fast. When I was in the Air Force, the biggest challenge that we had was what's on our network. How many servers do we have? How many routers? How much software? How many licensing pieces? We couldn't tell that. If I took 2 years to try to assess it, it wouldn't be accurate. Within the cloud, you have an API call that can give you that data instantly. That inherently, knowing what's on your network is the fundamental aspect of security, and being able to do it with an API call in a ubiquitous network is a very powerful aspect. Knowing if there's a rogue server under the desk and how that impacts your network. And we could spend the whole session on security, but by far, this is our number one priority. So all of that, you know, leads to why we think within 8 years, cloud computing is an exciting platform, and we're just getting started. The potential that exists within this forum and this universe of IT professionals and innovators is truly exciting. The reverse was true of this question not long ago. I will still say that there's somewhat of an underground within government, particularly some of the verticals of the Department of Defense. There's still some of the skeptics asking, you know, is it secure? Why should I move? Is it really cost effective? Some of the same things. But we're beginning to see a shift and a realization that it's here to stay. And the five elements that I just spoke to you about of the why folks are moving and organizations are beginning to take root. Now, here's the journey that we see. Typically, these are the four stages of cloud evolution and adoption. Clearly in the commercial space, I can fill up a slide on the number of organizations and entities that are all in. Born in the cloud, migrated to the cloud, all in. And obviously as a 3-year-old organization within public sector, we have a number of agencies and customers that are somewhere in between these three phases. Now, from a test and dev perspective, to be able to launch in minutes, to be able to do prototyping, and then spin down and say I'm done, is pretty exciting for an entity that's used to a buying cycle that says I have to take 3 to 5 months to buy my hardware, I have to find a data center, I have to go through the compliance piece of putting it on the network, and by the time it gets on the network and you're running your mission, you're late to need, and sometimes and very, very often running yesterday's technology. And being able to prototype fast with limited capital expenditure is creating discovery in new and exciting ways. I will tell you, the amount of test and development when you think about weapon systems within the military, within aerospace and defense industry, how much and how often the programs within government agencies that have to get into the developmental aspects end up spinning up tremendous amounts of hardware. If you ever did an audit across the federal government, it would be a very telling and significant number, I bet. And I find a hard to come up with a reason other than classifications and, you know, security, whether you're in it a secret or top secret, of why you would ever buy on-prem hardware to do test and development for programs and ideas. I'm becoming much more hard-pressed to figure that out. And here are just a few examples of organizations within government. You look at code, where there are 25 million students developed 18 million lines of code in this crowdsourcing perspective that's fundamentally changing how education is delivered. Stock exchange using SAP to experiment in test and dev environments. The second stage is production. Once they kick the tires, they move some of the testing, then it becomes, let's move into production. Classic example, Bristol Myers in the healthcare industry. These two numbers are really telling. Running two servers, hardware servers, for 60 hours, or spinning up 256 instances and running them all simultaneously for 1.2 hours. Less blood used in experiments, less clients used in experiments, significantly less cost, speed, agility, innovation. That's exciting. The 1,000 Genomes Project, where 250 terabytes of data are uploading in the cloud. Previously, users and researchers from around the world had to download all of that. Now they can go into the cloud, spin up an instance, bring in any of the genetic data that they want, conduct their experiments, and now those few who used to have access to it, where the high cost of failure was induced, now have much more ubiquitous access for researchers. And the discovery of that, of being able to 250 terabytes of raw genetic data, allowing any researcher from around the world to have access, again, gets back to that re-leveling of the playing field that I talked about earlier. The third stage is mission-critical apps. That's beginning to move toward the all-in stage by recognizing that you're making that big leap by deciding that this is critical to my mission and I'm taking the risk to put it in. And NASA JPL did that with the Mars landing. And the interesting piece of data here was because of the time to get telemetry down, the processing of that was taking so long that it was narrowing the window for planning the next mission. So they weren't getting enough missions in and getting enough exploration in. That process using compute on AWS was almost inverted, where the planning window opened up and they were conducting much more mission. And many of you were able to watch that streaming live on television and your computers when it happened. Center for Disease Control leverages compute capacity to monitor virus outbreaks, be able to disseminate, be able to share information. And stage four is all in. All in Obama for America. During the election, stated they saved millions of dollars of IT infrastructure. They transitioned 200 applications. Anything from tracking donors to calls to poll results to tracking voting, all aspects of it, they were all in. They had a bunch of very, very bright and innovative folks that began to understand how to use these applications, and they were able to spin up and spin down and wait for the next election. And many say that machine was a good reason why the election turned out. They were telling us afterwards that all this polling results and all of the pundits were saying in terms of who was winning or losing, they had raw data that was really, really accurate. And in the end, it turned out to be very accurate as they did the comparisons. So, as I wrap up, the journey's been exciting, but we are just beginning to scratch the surface. The transformational value of what cloud computing can do, whether it's education, industry, defense, small startup, is really exciting. What it's doing to disrupt business models is really, really exciting. And the journey has a long way to go. There will be new players. We've always expected that. But it's exciting to be a part of it, to be a part of seeing governments, from local governments to education to federal governments to defense organizations, beginning to recognize its value. Not because they have to drive toward these budget cuts and efficiencies, that's been the entry fee, but now they're beyond that, recognizing that once they're in the cloud, they can do newer, better, and more exciting things than they were able to do within the existing structures. So it's great to be a part of it. Thank you very, very much for the opportunity to address you. I look forward to engaging you and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Michelle Rudnicki is Vice President, Cloud Computing and Growth Initiatives at IBM Federal. In her current role, she is responsible for leveraging IBM's portfolio of cloud offerings to help clients optimize their infrastructures and better enable their businesses through the use of cloud computing. Prior to this role, she was the VP of IBM Federal Smarter Planet, where she led the growth initiatives across IBM's U.S. federal organization, working with clients to implement solutions in the areas of cloud computing, analytics, security, and green. Please welcome Michelle Rudnicki to Cloud Computing East.
Hey, thank you. Thank you all for coming this morning. I know your time is precious and you get to choose where you spend it. So we appreciate you coming and spending time with us here today, learning a little bit more about cloud computing, and hopefully you can take that back from what you learned from us and from your colleagues and apply that into your agencies or into your businesses. And I also like to thank Steve, because I think our presentations might dovetail very nicely. But we come at it from very different perspectives. Steve told you Amazon as a company is about 7 years old and Amazon public sector is about 3. IBM's a company that's is over 100 years old, and we've been working with the government since 1931. We helped to set up the Social Security systems, and we were part of the Apollo programs that put the man on the moon and all. So we have been a large part of many enterprises, healthcare enterprises as well as government enterprises over time. And so when we're looking at the transition and the transformation to cloud, we see a lot of the same trends, but I think we're looking at them slightly differently. Oops. I'm just going to go do Steve's presentation now. Steve talked about these trends that you're seeing going on in the market space. And when I was preparing for this presentation, I was thinking about what are we going to talk about, or how do we talk about what's going on in healthcare and government? I was also reflecting at the same time, my son is graduating from high school this year, and looking at, where have we been, what are the accomplishments, how has this child changed over time? For his baseball banquet, we had to get pictures of him playing baseball when he was 5, him playing baseball when he was 7, 15, and you can look at it and you can see those changes. And I think Steve talked about, the changes in technology and what we've seen. And then what does this mean for the future? So we've talked about these devices. You all have your smartphones, and everybody thinks about mobility driving the move to the cloud. But other things are driving that movement. One of my colleagues has one of those Fitbit bracelets. I'm sure a number of you have them as well. And we think about that. That's just one of the 200 billion intelligent devices that exist now, right? The ability to have those instrumented devices that start to create information, that generate information that needs to be retrieved, stored, processed somewhere and somehow, having the cloud being able to take that information and transmit it has become very important. And so if we stick with this, thinking about Fitbit a little bit more, this colleague of mine has talked to the guy who invented the Fitbit and what's coming next for them. And they're looking at, can we measure oxygen levels? Can we measure alcohol levels? What else could be done with this little piece of technology, which really started as a smart pedometer, but really has grown into something that people have become dependent on, right? How much exercise am I getting? How does that now, how can I now as a company say, these devices, lots of people have them. Is that a way that I could connect into that and look at that from a healthcare standpoint, right? If I have people sign up and agree to wear these, does that help me to reduce my premiums to those individuals? So you can see how the transformation is really starting to take all of these forces of technology that we see going on in the market space to start to evolve how we build and manage businesses. Again, nowhere is it more evident than in the healthcare space. And in fact, in the defense healthcare space, we're seeing a huge convergence to look at how do I get better care? how do I create a continuum of care that starts with, that follows the patient around? It starts when you might be in the military, follows you through being a veteran. And a lot of the services for the military are actually delivered or delivered by private healthcare companies. So how do I make sure that the information that I have as a patient seamlessly moves in the care and the treatment? How do I create the continuum that goes from well care through sick care, in hospital, and in home? And how do I leverage these new types of devices, many of those in-home devices, to be able to be part of that whole continuum of care? What we really see is that cloud is transforming businesses. And so when we started on the cloud journey, looking back through those pictures over the years, when we started on the cloud journey, initially people were thinking about those values of cloud to really, how do I drive cost out of my infrastructures? Especially in government, how do I drive cost out of my infrastructure? How do I do this more efficiently? How do I take advantage of that? As we move forward, what we're really seeing is it's about the business and how do I transform my business model. So about a year ago, IBM has the Center for Applied Insights, which is basically an in-house research firm. It's independent from any of our sales or product organizations, and they went out and did some research. They surveyed over 800 clients across 24 different industries and in 13 different countries. So it was a pretty broad study trying to understand what and how are people adopting the cloud and is it having an impact on their business. And what we had the respondents do is categorize themselves. So they categorized themselves in terms of how deeply had they embraced the cloud, right? Were they very advanced in terms of embracing the cloud, in terms of using it in their business? And then the second factor we asked them to self-assess on was, what kind of a business impact are you seeing? Much easier to do for businesses than for government agencies. And so we ended up categorizing the people into three different categories. One were what we call pace setters, and the pace setters had embrace the cloud, and they were seeing material impacts in a positive way into their business. The second group of people were what we are calling the challengers, and the challengers had embraced cloud, but they weren't necessarily seeing an impact in their business. And then the third group of people were the chasers, and the chasers were the ones that were a little bit more cautious about cloud, hadn't quite adapted to it yet, and had they weren't seeing any business impact for having done the cloud projects that they had done. To validate what the individual survey respondents said, we went out and looked at independent data to determine, for those that said they were seeing a business impact, could we materially measure it? And what we found is that the pace setters were growing their revenue 2 times faster than the chasers were. Even more notable was that they were growing their profitability 2.5 times faster. So there was actual empirical evidence to say this group of folks were doing something different and getting a very different result in the cloud than were the other businesses that were looking at and doing things the same way. So the next step we said is, okay, so we know that you're getting a different business impacts. What are these pace setters doing differently than their counterparts in other spaces? And the first thing we noted is convergence of what we're calling the major technology trends of today: analytics, mobility, social, big data. The pace setters were leveraging the cloud to implement those new technologies, using the cloud to accelerate their projects and programs that they were doing around mobile, so what we call CAMS, cloud analytics, mobile, social, and integrating those into their business. Not quite as much of a difference, but still a measurable difference over what the chasers were doing. The second thing that they noted is that they were using cloud to strategically reinvent their business. 136%, they were more likely to use cloud to reinvent their customer relationships. So when I look at this, and I was trying to find some good examples of where we were seeing people who had adopted cloud in a big way in both government and healthcare, one of the things is CalCloud. And when the state of California looked at itself, they said, how can I deliver different services to my my constituents, and the constituents in this case being state and local governments? How do I look at the cloud and leverage it to change my service delivery? So what California did is they created a CalCloud with all of the security concerns and everything. So it's run by the state and it's open to any state agencies so that they can use it. So a lot of, and Steve mentioned this as well, a lot of the concerns, especially in government, around moving to the cloud is security. Am I managing the security and privacy of the data of my citizens, of the programs that I have? How do I do that? And can I do this? And for their environment, what they wanted to go into was into a private cloud so that they could actually control it much like they would, but that they were getting the scales and the efficiencies of having a cloud infrastructure service. The second thing that the Paysetter respondents said is that they were using cloud to make better business decisions. So applying it in those areas of analytics that So to look at their business, to react to what they were seeing, the trends and technologies that they were seeing, or to look at it to improve services. One example in this case is the New York Conference of Mayors. There's over 20 million people in New York State, and the Conference of Mayors was looking at the challenges that they had relative to managing their environments, right? Cities are undergoing budget pressures, can't deliver the services that they have previously delivered, and needing to add on new and additional services. What the Conference of Mayors did was got together and said, if we collectively pool and look at a set of services that we can deliver out, then we can start using common services across all the different cities. And you know, if we're looking at some of the same factors, we can use this to improve our services and to interoperate. And they were looking at things like public safety. They were looking at road traffic information, passing and sharing that, how you're doing water management. So what they did is they went out and leveraged a number of SaaS services so that they were already tapping into pre-made services that were oriented to them and integrating that into a dashboard for each city. So now, again, changing the way that they're delivering services and using analytics, because now I'm feeding the information that I've got the traffic management, I've got the water management, and I've got that dashboard to be able to analyze and react to what I see going on. The third area that we saw our respondents said that they differentiated the way that they were implementing, the Paysetters were differentiating the way that they implemented cloud, was that they were leveraging the cloud to do collaboration and to locate expertise. And a really great example of this is the Colleagues in Care. Colleagues in Care is a nonprofit health organization. And for a long time, they've actually worked in Haiti. They work in underserved markets for healthcare. So in Haiti, prior to the earthquake in 2010, I believe the statistic is that they had one doctor and two nurses for every 10,000 people. So it's clearly an underserved market. So so what Colleagues in Care tries to do is get volunteers to go in and help to provide health care. Well, when the earthquake hit in 2010, this already underserved market needed a lot more help. There were a lot of people who volunteered to come in and help, but not all of them had the expertise that they needed to be in the environments that they were. So what Colleagues in Care did is they leveraged the cloud to quickly set up a collaborative site where they could figure out where all the experts were, all the healthcare experts around the world. They knew where they had volunteers on the ground, and they could match the capabilities of the experts to the place where they needed to deliver the care. So they could leverage the cloud to go globally and find the expertise and then use a number of different cloud capabilities to interact either face-to-face or through email communications, photos, and services to help to deliver what was needed at the point of service when they needed it. So it's a great feel-good story and shows, you know, one aspect of collaboration. The other thing that, the other area where we've seen collaboration happening in a different way, and again, it's how do we start to reinvent our business models? There's a company called DriveWise, and what DriveWise makes is a system, and it's like the easy pass for truck way stations, right? So you know on the highway, you pass all those truck way stations, and so every time the truckers pass the way station, they're supposed to pull in. And you know, you get the line of trucks that build up as the state goes through and inspects each of the trucks that goes through. What DriveWise solution does is it allows the driver of a truck to use their cell phone, so standard smartphone devices, and when they're about 2 miles out from the way station, they can turn on the device, click in, and they start signaling with the way station. If the trucker has all of their certifications up to date and everything, their inspections are up to date, the driver is up to date, all of that, they get a notification on their cell phone that says to pass. And so they can bypass the way station. And what that has done is it's helped to reduce traffic congestion on the highways. It helps the truckers because it allows them to be more efficient. They don't have to stop and wait. Now, the challenge is that system in traditional IT models would have been an investment by the state, which would be an unfunded program. Who else is interested in it? Well, the federal government, the National Highway Safety Administration is interested in that. And so what DriveWise did is actually worked with the trucking companies and their support organizations to say, wouldn't this be good? And we can charge you just a little bit. So they pay a fee every time to DriveWise. And the state actually implements and runs the tool, but it's funded by the companies and the truckers that get the benefit into their businesses. So it's a different way of looking at, you know, how cloud is helping us to reinvent the business by collaborating not just within our organizations, but looking across business lines to do so. The other angle that we took in this study was to look at inside the Pacesetters clouds, inside their how they were implementing cloud in their environments, in their businesses or agencies, what were they doing? And the number one differentiation that we saw between the Pacesetters and the Chasers was the fact that the Pacesetters had an enterprise-wide strategy for cloud. It wasn't something that they said, oh, I've just started adopting it over here. They actually sat and thought about how am I going to implement this and what's the benefit that I want to get out of the cloud? And they had an integrated plan for how they were going to get there. And you know, you kind of go, huh, that makes sense, right? In anything that you do, if I've got a plan of where I want to go, I'm more likely to get there than if I'm looking at if I just start doing a number of different projects. At least my house projects go that way. Oh, I started over here. We didn't have a goal of getting them all done today. They'll just go on for another few weeks. So having a plan and sticking to it and implementing it. The other thing we found out was when they had strategic plans, it was the business owners that had those plans. Over the next 3 years, the business owners, when asked how important it having a cloud plan, a strategic cloud plan was to their environment, last year they were at 34%. By 2 years out, they say that 68% importance of having a strategic plan, compared to when we went and surveyed the IT execs in those same companies, they were at 58% looking at the cloud as a strategic component of their plans. So you can see how as we're shifting in what is going on in the cloud environment, it really is creating that shift that Steve was talking about of the transition of technology to help us to reinvent our business. The other things that were noted in terms of what these companies were doing in terms of their cloud strategy was they were 2.5 times more likely to have implemented a cloud based on open standards, and they also were twice as likely to have implemented a hybrid cloud environment. And we see that that hybrid cloud environment is one that is starting to gain traction more and more for a number of different reasons that I'll talk about a little bit more in a minute. The last area was that within their organizations, when they implemented cloud projects, they did the start small, fail fast, but doing it with executive sponsorship, right? So go out, try a project, you know, see what you can do, gain some results, and then reiterate on it. So that was definitely one of the things that the pace setters were doing more often than the chasers and challengers. So what that really shows us is that cloud is really changing the way that we work. From a business leader standpoint, what they're looking for is having those composable services that they can just tap into in order to start to run their businesses. What we see developers looking for is ways of having tools and technologies that they can leverage, right, at more of a platform level to be able to dynamically build applications. And then at an infrastructure level, what we're really seeing is those operations people and the infrastructure support people are looking for dynamic environments where they have to worry less about all the underpinnings of it, but that they can tap into, having software-defined environments, but that span both their private environments as well as their public environments. So what we see happening in the cloud space, going back to, you know, when we're looking at it from our set of clients, we have a good number of clients, enterprise clients, who have huge investments in IT infrastructures today. And that trend that we saw of cloud to really start to, how do I start to optimize IT and drive cost out of my infrastructure? In their systems of record, the ones that are already there, we're seeing that trend continue. But they don't want to necessarily do a rip and replace. What they want to do is optimize in that space, maybe leverage the cloud for where we see the benefits of cloud. And what we see happening on the other end of it is the born on the cloud applications. Those areas, the systems of engagement, we talked about the Fitbit or your mobile devices, those systems that are new developments in the cloud that are really engaging with the citizens, engaging with our clients in customer-facing ways, new applications. There's no reason to develop a new application in a system of record. What you really want to do is create those systems of engagement. And what becomes important is, just like if I wanted to start using, you know, a Fitbit or any kind of a device, I have a whole medical system that exists. I need to be able to interlock what I'm doing in these new applications and these new worlds and marry that up with my systems of record. And that's what we see going on in the cloud. And then that's how we've aligned our portfolio. We look at it across all of the different levels of services, be it infrastructure as a service, and creating a dynamic environment there. And what I mean by that is we have both a internet scale cloud capability that we acquired. So IBM about just under a year ago acquired a company called SoftLayer. And what that gives us is an internet scale capability for infrastructure as a service. It does it in a slightly different way than you might see. We have both shared VMs and we have bare metal servers that can be served up in a cloud fashion, helping you to drive down the cost, but allowing you to have the control that you want. A little bit more costly than being able to take advantage of a shared VM, but it gives you more control and can help you to build that dynamic hybrid environment. So for where I want to have more control or where I have an application that might not be able to be virtualized, I can leverage the bare metal servers. Where I want to be able to be in a multi-tenant environment and really drive cost out of my infrastructure, I can do that. And then on the other side, we still have a portfolio of hardware that can help you to develop a private cloud on-site that is optimized for your environment for those areas where you either have sensitivities or you're never going to move that application off-site. So software-defined to be able to move dynamically across those. A set of platform technologies, development tools, analytics tools, and security tools that allow you to develop out on that platform layer. But really, by leveraging services. Again, they're just enhancements over just an infrastructure. And then lastly, we've got an entire portfolio of consumable services. So that spans everything from an integrated operations center that you might use to run a city in the cloud, or it's asset management in the cloud, collaboration in the cloud, all of those tools, all of those services that you might want to just tap into and start using right away. And we do this in public, private, and as well as dynamic. So it's leveraging all of those different services to start to change the way that we run our IT shops, that we run our development shops, and that we run our businesses by having services that are available to everybody. So the other thing that we have really been focused on, and there's a saying that the worst sinners become the best repenters, and so IBM is a model for that. We used to run very closed systems in the 60s and 70s, but by about the late 80s and early 90s, what we discovered is that openness is key to really driving innovation, and we have been a huge adopter of open standards at every level. And we also see that opening up our own systems actually helps to drive innovation. So in our cloud strategy, we've adopted open standards, we've participated and helped to create some of the standards bodies so that we can drive the innovation that we think needs to happen. Bluemix is an application development environment that is based on open standards. It's based on the Cloud Foundry that we invested in with Pivotal. And what Bluemix does is it gives you a development environment where you can really just start tapping into services to build your business applications. It is both IBM and non-IBM. It's based on open standards so that you can actually take advantage of tools and assets that other developers have done or that you've done yourself. If you've done it based on open standards, you can just go get something out of GitHub, bring it in, and be able to use that as a component of your development. What I now can do is start to build and reuse on a faster and more dynamic basis. I'm doing it in the cloud. I've driven my cost out, and it gives me incremental agility. What we've also built in here is a number of tools that can help you to really gain that agility as you move from a development environment into an operational environment. And so if you look at our DevOps services for Bluemix, you have a number of different services that you can tap into to be able to develop, store it out, do some testing. And again, these tools are available in both a private or a traditional IT environment on-premise, as well as in the cloud. And so what that gives you is extreme agility in terms of how do you integrate into your existing IT environments, but leverage the cloud for where the cloud can give you the most advantage. We're making this all available in a marketplace. If you go out to our website now, www.ibm.com/cloud, you will enter into the marketplace. You can go there, you can find information, you can just do informational searches, or if you click down through, you can click to the button that says buy it. Everything is going to be right there for you. Not only IBM, but we're growing the ecosystem, all available to you in a very easy to use fashion that you can just click and go. The last innovation that I wanted to touch on is, where are we going, right? What's next for us, right? As we look at the cloud and we look at what we're developing out, I don't know how many of you remember, about 2 years ago, we set out to do a grand challenge and play Jeopardy. We wanted to see if we could build a computer system that could actually take on the greatest Jeopardy champions of the past several years. And so we did that. That system was called Watson, and Watson went and played against the Jeopardy champions in a three-night series, which was quite fun to watch. But what it really taught us to do is we had to build a system that thought like a person, right? It had to be able to understand the questions. It had to be able to understand the puns and everything that was going on and be able to interpret those and react to them. So that capability was a really behemoth system. Where are we going now with it? We've opened up Watson. It's for developers to start developing in the Watson environment. It's a cloud service that you can tap into. So what we're really trying to say is, you know what, IBM alone is not going to figure out all the problems that Watson could possibly solve. but the rest of the world is. And that's really where cloud is really starting to spawn innovation into the future. So I think you'll see more people joining this community. In fact, I think there is a hackathon going on now for people to leverage the Watson development environment and be able to develop mobile applications using Watson, and I think that's scheduled to time out the first week of June. So getting back to our study, and just to conclude here, when we went back to the folks and said, the survey respondents and said, what do you see coming in the cloud? There were three areas. One of that they thought would be beneficial for them to have. What they saw as the future was building blocks of products and services that they could use. They wanted to be able to tap into even bigger, big data. And what they also wanted was industry-focused services and solutions that they could use to build their business. So we see this change coming. There's lots of things going on in the cloud space. And if anybody doubted before, hopefully I've left you with the thought that there's empirical data that cloud is changing the way that we're thinking about businesses. We're very early on this journey, and there's a lot more to come. So with that, I'd like to thank you, and welcome Marty back up.